This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Latin America, the Americas. And right now, the story is dominated by the southern border. The hundreds, thousands pushing across the line in some fashion to enter the United States to take up occupation in major cities that are unable. The story is also at the Darien Gap about people taking grave risk with themselves, their children, young people, pregnant women, small children crossing a triple canopy jungle 60 miles, very perilous, crossing rivers that have no bridges. However, the story is also in the United States. I learned from Mary Anastasia O'Grady, the America's editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal editorial board, that the National Security Council of the Biden administration, advisor for Latin America, Juan Gonzalez, said in 2021 that the Guatemalan business community, the capitalists in Guatemala, are a predatory elite. What is that? How does that translate into that crisis at the southern border and those people taking the risk at the Darien Gap? Mary, a very good evening to you. Predatory elite. What was Mr. Gonzalez referring to? And what does this tell us about the Bidenistas and growth? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. I think that that comment about the Guatemalan business community really captures the kind of anti-capitalism view of the Biden administration, the National Security Council working on Latin America, and the State Department. And they are more interested in equality of income, which means that if you have rich people and poor people, that shouldn't be allowed. And they're more interested in pushing their cultural narrative. And on the subject of economic development, this means that they are down on business interests that would go in and invest and actually make profits, which are necessary for economic development, but that they don't want to see happen because, as I said, their priority is equality of outcomes.
The prosperity would make it attractive for people to stay at home where they have grown up and have opportunities. I'm presuming that that is a major piece of the component of the whole world coming to the United States because they're coming from countries where they're economically under stress. That is profoundly true in Venezuela, where the economy has collapsed and we have a rogue regime that's indifferent to its own people. You make the connection in your column. Do you see this resonant in Washington? Do they recognize that if they're making money in Quito, they're not coming to Baltimore?
Well, it hasn't been a popular way of thinking about the migration problem, either on the right or the left. You know, the right is very protectionist at this point, led by Donald Trump. And the left, as I said, has this other set of priorities, which militate against economic development and basically capitalism in the region. And the reason I wrote this column is because, you know, I think that we should understand this huge wave of migration that is hitting the southern border as a lot of people who are looking for a place to live that has property rights, investment, monetary stability, and opportunity. And that's why they're coming to America. They're not coming to America because they necessarily want to be Americans. They want economic opportunity. And I think that for a long time, neither the right or the left in the United States has thought about this in terms of its link to migration. So what I would like to see is a return to the idea that a pro-growth agenda for the region, which focuses on low taxes, open markets, sound money, a light tax and regulatory burden, and so forth, is the only way that you end up solving, if you will, the migration problem, because you have to get these economies growing fast and creating opportunity for the people who are born there and live there. And a lot of these people are young. So there's this whole generation of people from the region who look at their future, see no opportunity, and then, as you mentioned before, take enormous risks just to get into the United States because that's the only place where they see opportunity.
There is history about this, and you point to the Latin debt crisis of the early 80s that was solved by prosperity, or the offer of prosperity, in the North American Free Trade Agreement. Can that work again, Mary?
I think it can. I mean, you know, just to review what happened in 1982, you had this huge debt crisis, and the 80s are often called the lost decade. George H. Walker Bush recognized, as we got into the 90s, that if these countries didn't start growing, they were never going to get out of the burden that had been generated from the debt crisis. And without growth, there would be no opportunity. So he engaged in a kind of in thinking about enterprise, entrepreneurial opportunity in the region. And what came out of that was the North American Free Trade Agreement, which, contrary to Donald Trump's demagoguing the pact, was actually created a lot of opportunity and improved very much living standards in northern Mexico and helped the United States become competitive in globally in the automotive sector, and helped Canada. So, you know, Trump tried to destroy NAFTA. He didn't succeed. I mean, he goes around saying that he reworked it, but basically it stayed the same with a couple of changes that have made labor more expensive, not good things. And those were brought to you, by the way, by Trump's trade representative, but also by the Democratic Party. So NAFTA worked, and so did the Washington Consensus, contrary again to conventional wisdom, the idea that governments had to be more responsible with their fiscal in the fiscal matters, in monetary matters, privatization. Those things actually worked, and I mean, there were policy errors which ended up undermining them, but I would say overall, they were successful, and we have to keep going with them if we are going to create opportunity for this huge population in the region that doesn't have anywhere to go.
Mexico. We have a quick example here of a success, Mexico, and yet you report that the U.S. Trade Representative, Catherine Tai, does not focus on growth. She focuses on policing, I guess, is the way to think about this, regulating Mexico as if it's the United States.
Well, you know, if she was only focusing on labor, maybe, you know, if that was the only thing to criticize her on, maybe she could say, well, we want to impose labor constraints on Mexico, such that we have in Chicago and Detroit. By the way, her policies aimed at labor probably would not pass in right-to-work states in the south of the United States. But there's another thing she's doing, I think, that is very costly, and that is that she's basically not following her obligation to push on the U.S. MCA, the trade agreement with Mexico, to protect energy investors. And those are in oil, gas, and renewables. And the USTR has complained to Mexico about the discrimination, but a year and 3 months later, they still have not convened a panel to actually deal with this problem. And the reason she's doing that is because she doesn't, I mean, the climate agenda is a priority to her and the Biden administration. They would rather see the oil and gas industry destroyed rather than to see investment and property rights be protected in Mexico.
Prosperity is the response to migration on the scale we're seeing. Mary Anastasia O'Grady, the America's columnist and editor of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. I'm John Batchelor.